following has been produced by PutThemInASong.com.
My name is Shane Yoder. I write songs for a living. And every day, I hear stories transform into songs. Now you can too. Welcome back to The Root Note. What took you guys so long to get back here? I know, I apologize. It took me a while to do it, but I'm back. I wanted to make sure the studio was up and running. And for those that don't know, I converted my old wood shop and insulated it and turned it into the studio I'm in right now. So, and my wife just walked in.
Oh, sorry. Are you okay?
What? Yeah, go ahead.
Did you find my camera lens?
I wasn't told to look for it.
No, I mean, like, have you seen one in here? This is dumb. You're recording your podcast. I'll talk to you later.
No,
it's okay. No worries.
No, I don't have a camera lens.
Fire it out, family.
And as you can see, we're still keeping it top-notch over here. Thank you guys for coming back, sticking around, waiting. I really appreciate it. And to that degree, I'm so excited to introduce you to one of my friends from Memphis. And he just moved to Nashville. But you may know him from one of his many cover videos that have gone viral. This is Marty Ray, Part 1.
Conversation is now being recorded.
So I get a call. This was about 2 months after the video posted, maybe three. And I answer the phone just like any other call that would come through because it was a business phone. And I say, Glenn Ray's Towing, you know, how can I help you? And it was a guy, he said, hey, Marty Ray, like that, you know. I saw your song. And I go, oh, man, appreciate it. You like that? And he goes, yeah, man, I love that song, man. I was like, oh, I appreciate it, bro. I appreciate that. Still, I did not have a clue who this was, right? I had no clue this was Vanilla Ice. Shane, you could never reach my wavelengths of speech. Even with your mic all the way up. I have a naturally loud voice.
Well, and it's boomy.
It is.
Bob Ruff is the same way.
Who's Bob Ruff? His name fits him if that's the case.
Yeah.
Ruff.
He's the host of Truth and Justice. I score his podcast every week.
Ah.
Do some sound design on his voice and stuff.
So you're recording now?
Yeah.
What is this? Are we rolling with it? You gonna put this in the podcast?
I don't know.
Who knows?
There were some questions I wanted to ask you, but
I'm fine. I like this kind of format. Just get together and start talking. We should tell how we met then. Because you worked at Best Buy. I was just telling somebody this the other day, actually. It's funny. I was reminiscing about the days when Best Buy had the Music Center. I remember I loved that place. I loved going in there, and Guitar Center was the places where if I was bored, I would go look around and play with instruments.
You got bored a lot.
I did.
You came in quite a bit.
I did. And that's how I met you. You were there. Immediately when I heard you play, I was like, man, this guy's talented, man. And then I don't know how you found out that I was a singer, though, because I didn't really promote myself in that fashion. I think I might have asked you to come jam. I think that's what happened, because I was building a stage and the studio I was trying to build in my shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, every time I'd meet a musician, I'd say, hey, you should come and let's jam. And I think that's how it started. I don't think you even knew that I sang or anything until you actually came.
Well, I remember you saying you didn't really know you could sing, like up until recently when I met you.
That's funny that I told you that, because that's actually an intimate story that I don't remember telling you that. But it's funny. We must have been closer than I remembered. But
I'm pretty forgetful.
You must not be. But the thing is that story, the way what that means is growing up, when I was born, I never learned how to sing. You know what I'm saying? Like, it never was something that I said, oh, let me figure this out because I love this. I just sang all the time, and it was just, it just felt good. I thought, and I heard myself, and I thought, I like the way I sound. And at first, I was mimicking people. I could mimic people like Ray Charles or Boyz II Men or Lynyrd Skynyrd. all these type of people. So I would mimic them.
Mimic the runs and not the tone?
No, mimic their voice, like Garth Brooks. And like, okay. Sometimes late at night, I lie awake and watch her sleeping. I used to be a lot better at Garth Brooks than that, right? I used to could mimic him absolutely on, like, to perfection. Him and Boyz II Men and these people, I could mimic them, and people would always, like, my one side of my family would say, man, you're really good, and the other side would say, hey, you suck, right? So I never knew. I was like, what kind of market is there for somebody that can just mimic somebody? Mm-hmm. There's not. There's nothing, like, for that person.
Right.
There's that, 'cause those people already exist. So where you have one side of is the musicians and the singers that I looked up to, and I was like, man, like my uncle, I was like, man, I want to be like him because he could sing, man. He had soul, and I was always into soul, like Al Green and those type of people, Al Green and Marvin Gaye. That was like my lane growing up. I loved that music, still do. And he sang like that. He never listened to any of their music ever his whole life. He only listened to gospel music. That's all. I remember at Christmas very vividly. It was a Christmas. We went to the church to jam, to play around. And I took that microphone. And I started singing one of the songs. I don't remember what it was, but I was singing one of the songs. And he said, you should play the drums, right? And I was like, what does that mean though? What do you mean by that? He said, you should learn how to play the drums if you want to get in music. And I was like,
that's a terrible thing.
I know. And then he was like, I was like, why though? I said, I feel like I might, you know, like some people like the way I sing, you know. He goes, see, you can't always be the head of everything, Marty, like that, you know. He said, you weren't meant to be a singer. And I said, you know, at that point, I'm angry, right? You know how I can get if I get angry. So I was telling him, or how I used to be, I'm really not that way anymore, believe it or not. I'm a whole new person. But back then, I was really bad. So when he said that, I was like, you ain't no good either. You ain't as good as you think you are, all these things, you know. And so kind of hurt his feelings. And he was phenomenal. There was no reason for me to say that. But it was just out of anger that I would say something like that he didn't like what I did. And so then left that night and was just, you know, just thinking, well, I guess I'm wrong. I guess that I'm one of these people that hear their self and they think they sound good, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
I know those. Yeah.
You know those people?
Yeah.
And so I was like, I guess I just gave up on the whole idea of ever being a singer, right? I was like, this is not for me. It's just a hobby, something I enjoy doing. And I said, maybe someday I'll be a songwriter, you know. But I think I go about those type of things differently. If I don't like the way you sound, I'm not going to say you should pick up an instrument to do music, because I know there's a market for every single person. You can hear some really idiotic things in my mind in music today, but they have a huge following. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there's no reason for me to ever tell somebody, oh, you better do this if you want to get in music. If you feel what you're doing, there's probably a market for you out there somewhere, mm-hmm. if you find them.
Do you think that's marketing and knowing how to use social media, or do you think they're 100% fans?
You mean, do I think their fans are 100%?
Yeah.
I do. Some of the stuff, you don't even know what I'm talking about, but some of the stuff I've heard, I don't want to call it out, but some of the stuff I've heard, you have to enjoy this to put up with it.
I get it. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I know.
Like, it can't be just this brainwashing thing. Oh, I've seen it go viral on social media, so it must be good type thing. It has to be, for them to be going and doing concerts and selling out venues. You see what I'm saying? Now, I ain't talking about these people that I'm talking about aren't like selling out stadiums by no means, but they have a fan base that allows them to make a good living doing music. And that's what most musicians want.
Yeah.
You know, I guess most musicians think they want the big stage and they want all that. But if they ever got there, they would find out that that's not what they want. You know what I mean? Like, that is not what people think it is. There's even songs written about it. You know Mike Posner?
No.
You ever heard the song, I took a pill in Ibiza to show Avicii I was cool? When I finally got sober, felt 10 years older, but F it, it was something to do.
I've been living out in familiar. L.A. Yeah, yeah.
So he's literally telling people, because he says, you don't want to be high like me. Never knowing why like me. So he's like talking about how alone he is. Mm-hmm. He's at the top of the world, like at the pinnacle of success, and he feels alone. At first, I went through several different people trying to actually form a band that would be there forever, that type of thing. And people just come and go. Musicians come and go. They're not real reliable people most of the time. Yeah. You know what I mean? So at that point, I said, well, I got to change this to where it's a band name and a project. And that's what I was thinking. What this project is, how far can a man make it without signing a record deal? Mm-hmm. That's my whole shtick, right?
Right.
I don't want a record deal. I could have signed a record deal. Don't want one, right? Probably could still sign one. Matter of fact, I have an email from one right now that I could probably sign my life away to if I wanted to. Don't want it. Don't want right. no part of that. So that's the project is how far can a man go with just him, God, and his fans? How far can it go?
Now, I think that's a cool idea.
The let me finish the part about the musicians. I don't want musicians to think I hate them.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to
because
that.
Because I am crippled without a musician, right? I can play guitar, but I'm not a guitarist by no means. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What was that?
Hank's dreaming.
He said, is that him? Yeah. Golly, I thought there was a water drip.
I know. The first, it took me a while to get used to it, but we'd be watching TV and all of a sudden...
It sounded like all out of my bad ear. It sounded like somebody took a water dripper and just dropped a bit of water into a. You see what I'm saying? That is crazy. That is nuts. I love that.
I think he's chasing squirrels.
So anyway, so the like. That's what actually drove me to actually learn how to play the guitar myself. Because when we first met, I couldn't play guitar. I know you remember that.
I remember that.
And matter of fact, when you left, I don't think I played the guitar still.
You do a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if I do an acoustic show, I will still always, they'll always have to pay me and a guitarist to come. Usually CJ Wilder, who I want you to connect with. Maybe he comes and we do some stuff out here, but you remember CJ, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So usually him and I, we actually just got back from Canada. Just did an acoustic show. It was very intimate. Like it was just some rich guy's backyard and he had us play around his fire pit with just like five people.
Really?
It was nuts, man. But like I said, I rely heavily on him. I have vast respect for musicians, so I don't want anybody to ever think that I don't respect musicians. But to the question you asked, in my opinion, a vocalist feels like a musician is replaceable. Mm-hmm. Because they are, but they're not. You see what I'm saying? You can find another musician. Right. They're a dime a dozen, especially here. But you can't find chemistry.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what CJ and I have...
Well, you view CJ as more of a band member than a musician.
Right, I have. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But I don't think most, like I said, most vocalists, they don't. Well, they're not even, because they're even taught that from labels now.
But also, when, you know, especially in my town, I played bass for multiple bands, right? And you don't have a lot of vocalists going back and forth between different bands to play different shows, because... I don't know why that is, but as musicians, my friends growing up, you know, we all played in different bands.
And that's the way it is for musicians.
Yeah, to keep playing, doing what you love. And I think it's harder for vocalists to
I don't think a vocalist can do that.
I don't know.
I don't think it's possible.
You know, if you're in a bar band, wedding singers, you know, stuff like that, that is very interchangeable. You know these songs? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But personal projects aren't.
Yeah, and that's the reason why like vocalists feel the way they do, because usually musicians like you and CJ's the same way. He to stay busy, he plays for a bunch of people. He right, has a lot exactly. of regulars that he plays with, but he plays with several different bands. But I think I need to wrap up the story that I was telling.
I don't remember what. Okay, so we met at Best Buy.
At some point after that, you said that you had some songs that you needed a singer for.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, let's do it. And then you helped me with music on two of my songs. Was you at the studio?
Because
I remember CJ
and
was
Sean's
there.
Sean's studio? Yeah.
Sean's.
And yeah, out in Gallatin?
Yeah.
Red Alert Studios, I believe.
Red Alert Studios. I think that that album initially, because when I released that initially, I believe in, I thought 2010. And then a manager comes along and they're like, because they heard Speckled Bird. Do you ever hear that one?
Mm-hmm.
So they heard that and they came along and they were telling me they were going to get my album placed on iTunes and all that stuff, you know, and the new and noteworthy and all these things. And so I gave them permission. They said, well, you got to pull that album down and we'll post it under our label or whatever. So I was like, oh, okay. Being green, I was like, all right, I pulled that down. They posted it. So I think that was like a year or two later. And then they posted it. I never seen nothing from it. And I never got any of the reports. I never knew anything. And at this time, I was already starting to get, I think I was starting to get like not viral, but like, you know, I had Speckled Bird and that got like 30,000 views. And I thought, man, I'm famous now. You know what I mean? Like I'm killing it. And so then I did a video, like a parody, fat girl video. That wasn't a parody. It was just a rap song that we wrote, from a T-Pain app. You remember that app? That T-Pain
app?
Yeah.
The autotune thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And me and my little brother wrote this rap that was to one of the instrumentals on there. And that got like 30,000 views. And I was like, man, I'm just killing it at this point. And so then I was like, somebody, at least one person I know has went and downloaded one song of mine at this point. And so I contacted the management and they were like, we haven't seen anything. And I said, can I see a report though to show that you haven't seen anything? Show me your TuneCore or your whatever you use to aggregate getting my album up there.
Did they have all your songs or just the Speckled Bird?
No, they had, I never posted Speckled Bird on iTunes. So they had the album. The album had Tow Truck Driver,
Countryman,
Boots, Paper, and I think that was it. At the time, it was just those four.
Okay.
And then, so then I told them, I said, look, I want you to pull my album down. So then I had to repost it again. So the album was actually posted on iTunes three times.
The Root Note Podcast is brought to you by PutThemInASong.com. That's my website where you can go to put anything you'd like into a song. We do a lot of birthday gifts, anniversaries, and even first dance songs that fit you and your partner perfectly. Because you help us write it. You give us details about your loved one and what you want the song to say, and we write and record a song that they'll never forget. Whether it's a full-length song or a 15-second ringtone, PutThemInASong.com, where you have a better voice than you think.
I'll tell you what made me learn, what really made me pick up the guitar. It was two things. I had been buying a bunch of cheap guitars, like, you know, $200-$300 guitars, saying I'm going to learn this time, right? And didn't learn, ended up giving those guitars away, and hopefully somebody actually learned from them and became great musicians. You know, I don't know. But I went to Guitar Center to buy the final guitar that would cause me to learn. And I said, I'm going to spend a lot of money on this guitar to call it an investment, to force me to go, I better pick this up now. So then I paid like $2,000 for a Martin guitar and still didn't pick it up. Still just set it up there as a trophy piece. I was like, man, what a beautiful guitar. Sounds great. And when I strummed the one chord I know, it sounds amazing, that G. And so then I started getting autographs on it. You remember that? Mm-hmm. And because I don't think you were fond of it. But you weren't, were you?
I didn't really have an opinion.
I
didn't realize it was a Martin, though.
It was a Martin.
I thought it was an old junker. Like
no.
A Sears guitar or something.
Oh, you're talking about the one that was hanging, that was broken?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something that some old man gave me.
Okay.
No, but my Martin That was just one I hung that was had the broken head off, and I had everybody sign that. I ended up throwing that away eventually.
Okay.
I wish I wouldn't have, but I did. You can't move everything forever.
Yeah.
I had the Martin after. I bought that Martin after I did that album, that EP. So I had a Martin guitar and an album. So I said, now I got to do something. I have to, because I'm at the mercy of musicians to write songs. And I hate this. I hate being at the mercy of musicians. Like, because if they don't feel the same way about a song that I do, then it's not going to come out right. So I said, I have to figure out at least how to relay to them what I want played at some point. Like, what key is this in? They would, like, that's one of the things they would say a lot of, what key is this? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, but people like you and CJ, I could just sing and y'all would be like, oh, that's, yeah, I don't know what that is. You know, immediately y'all would know it. And I was like, man, that's really cool. I hope I get there. I'm still not there. I couldn't tell you at all. So probably never will be able to say.
That's weird because, you know, as a guitar player and, you know, my major's in bass, but I can hear the root note pretty easily. You know, the first note of a scale. That's how you get all the chords and stuff structured from that. But that ear for that took me some practice to develop.
Yeah.
But from what you were saying, you have a good ear because you can hear tone or pitch. I don't know if you have perfect pitch or not, but that's something you never had to practice. But you say you can't hear what key it's in. That's interesting. No,
I can't.
That's interesting.
It's just a feeling. So to me, it's a feeling. And that's why I like when they say, for instance, if I did, like I used to go when CJ was doing the jam session years ago at Fiddle and Steel, that was actually the first live show I'd ever done. It really wasn't a show. It was me singing two songs up there on his stage. Right. And, but nobody there knew that. Like when I got up there, even though I was a terrified little boy, right, at that moment, I was absolutely terrified. And then I got up there, I somehow hid that. So then I got up there and said, what song are you going to sing? I said, Simple Man, right? Figured that was a good song everybody would know. And they said, what key? I said, I don't have a clue. I said, oh, man. So then you're really getting nervous.
You can do it, oh, baby, if you try.
Oh man, are they going to be able to play this now? You know, because you don't know, you know? And so then they just start playing in C because that's what the song's in, you know, I think, isn't it?
It's either C or G.
I'm pretty sure it's C. I think it goes.
I kind of want to say it's in B flat, but I don't know.
I think the acoustic version is definitely in C. I think everybody plays it in C. I play it in C now.
Maybe I'm thinking of Shinedown's version.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe.
I don't think.
Which is one I still have probably heard the beginning of. Yeah. But I'll tell you why. Because I was singing Simple Man like I sang it now, before Shinedown, when I was a teenager. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So like I sang it like that, thinking I was mimicking Lynyrd Skynyrd, but it didn't sound anything like him. But then when people hear me years later and I start building a fan base, they say, you remind me of Shinedown, right? You sound like Shinedown. And I'm like, I don't even know who that is. I didn't know who it was. And I'd never heard any song by them. And they said, you should do Simple Man by Shinedown. And I said, did they do a song called Simple Man too? Like, because I had no clue that they just covered the Skynyrd song.
They're from Memphis, you know?
One of them is. The guitarist.
Is it just one of them? I thought they were all from there.
I don't think they all are. But I know for a fact that
Zach
Myers is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have no animosity towards them. I think they're okay. They're not my kind of music. I don't necessarily listen. I don't sit down and listen to their music, is what I'm saying. So I didn't know these people, but I also took offense to people saying you should do Simple Man by Shinedown, when I know Simple Man is by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same with the Tennessee Whiskey. People say that now today. They'll say things like, you should do Tennessee Whiskey by Chris Stapleton. And I'm like, I've been singing Tennessee Whiskey my whole life, and it wasn't by Chris Stapleton. It was by George Jones. You know, not that he wrote it, but he was the first one I ever heard, and he was the one that made it blow up. You know what I mean? I think David Allan Coe might have wrote that or something. Anyway, but you see my point.
Yeah.
I don't like it. It just bothers me when people just attach a legendary song to a new band. Like, if they did the same thing with me, I wouldn't like that. Like, if people said you should do, I don't know, any song that I've done, if they said you should do this by Marty Ray, and I'm like, look, I didn't, that's not my song.
Yeah. Well, it's a business decision. I understand exactly what you're saying, but, you know, covers have always been, people cover songs all, you know, ever since songs were written.
Right. Know? Well,
and
even
there, it's, you can't expect people to know, oh, this is not the original one. They should have some kind of label, like, to give credit to the original writer or the original performer or something. I wish they would do that a little bit better, but yeah, it's hard for people to know.
It's just shocking to me, though. It shocks me when it's that big of a song, like Simple Man.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the biggest songs ever.
That is pretty shocking, yeah.
Like, how do you not know that that's a Lynyrd Skynyrd song?
Yeah.
It's not every song, because it doesn't, like, if they said it about
Sweet Child of Mine, Sheryl Crow.
Right.
Yeah.
So something like that.
Yeah.
If they start now attaching that to her, and this is a massive song. If it was Thriller, right? Thriller from Michael Jackson, and somebody come out and did this crazy cool version of it, but everybody started attaching it to them, it would bother me. Mm-hmm. Because I know you know that Michael Jackson did Thriller.
Right. Yeah, that's a huge hit.
So I'm just talking about big hits like that. It doesn't matter if it's small, if it's a song that was obscure that, you know, Ray Price did, you know, and then somebody now is doing it and now it's got the attention that it deserved back then but didn't get, that's different. I understand that. But when it's one of the biggest songs in the world, well, you could probably look on any list and see Simple Man on one of the top songs of all time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I would think, like, Rolling Stones would make a list.
But that was a damn good cover.
I haven't even heard all of it.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Well, you should go listen to it, man. That's a good one. That's one of the best covers.
I'm kind of bitter towards it at this point in my life.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'll still listen to it. It's not like I hate Shinedown. But I'm saying, here's what I don't want. Here's what I would hate to happen. This is funny. I would hate to listen to it and like it more than Skynyrd. You see what I'm saying?
I can understand that.
I would hate that to happen.
I'm in that boat.
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, John Mayer does an awesome cover of Bold as Love on
my favorite album of all time
is John Mayer, Continuum album.
I love Gravity from that album.
Yeah. That's Bold as Love is done by Jimi Hendrix. He did. That's a Jimi Hendrix song. But I guess when I say cover, I meant mainly just a solo. Like, the solo John Mayer does in that song is mind blowing.
So is that your favorite artist?
John Mayer?
Yeah.
No.
No?
No.
But that's your favorite album.
That's one of my favorite albums, yeah. Like, I will listen to that front to back all day.
Really?
Yeah, it's so good.
Well, I wanted to at least seal up the story about the guitar before moving on. What really drove me more than the price of the guitar was when I started getting autographs. And you remember the story of B.B. King when he signed my guitar?
No, go ahead and tell it.
Me tell it?
Yeah.
It's kind of long, so I don't know how much time you're trying to keep this at.
You got 2 minutes.
That ain't gonna work. So I go to see BB King, and I'm on the front row, and he's playing, and I'm a big fan, and he stops and looks. He stops the show. He looks right at me, and he says, "As long as that man right there is enjoying the show, so am I." I was looking around thinking he couldn't have been talking to me. And Chad was with me, and he goes, "Bro, he was looking right at you." And I was like, "That's nuts, man. I don't understand why. What was I doing?" There was some kind of kindred spirit he felt immediately. And so then I had the pleasure of being able to go backstage because I knew somebody there. And we were being led backstage with a flashlight. Couldn't see anything. And so I was just following this security guard with a flashlight. And then as I'm walking down this narrow row, this big hand comes out of there's this line of security guards. This big hand comes out and grabs my hand and starts pulling me towards these security guards. And then I'm being pulled towards them. And these security guards are going, you got to move on. And I'm like, somebody has my hand right here. Somebody's pulling my hand. I didn't know who it was. And then they go, oh. And it's BB freaking King pulling me to him in his wheelchair. And he's pulling me like this. And he looks up and he goes, "I want you to know I enjoyed having you tonight." And I go, "What? Why is this happening?" Right? I'm sitting here thinking, this is like a movie. This is like a film. Right? I have no, there's no reason for this guy, for BB King, this legend, to be holding my hand. Some spiritual something happened that night that caused him to feel connected to me. And so he's holding it. I had a BB, which is on my wall today, BB King record. And he said, "What you got here?" And he looks at it. And he goes, "Boy, that's a handsome man there." And I said, "Sure is, Mr. King. Still is today." And he said, he signed it. He said, I'll see you shortly. So we're going back to the green room. Now, I'm in this line. There's this massive line of just all of his supposed family, right? Because he was in Tunica, Mississippi. So, and he's, I believe, from Mississippi originally. So this massive line of people, they're bringing guitars in and out, right? If it's not a Gibson guitar, they're turning them away. His management saying he's contractually, he's under contract. He cannot sign anything but a Gibson.
Wow.
And so it's his own supposed family. And I think for some reason they knew that they were just trying to get something to sell. So I'm waiting in this long line. And I made sure I was the last one because I wanted to have the best shot at getting this Martin, like probably Gibson's number one competitor, signed by BB King somehow. And so I walk in there and his eyes light up and he's like, "Now there he is. I was wondering," he does his hip like this, you know, "I was wondering when you was coming in." I was like, "Mr. King, it's an honor, man, to be in here, just to be in your presence and all that type of thing." And I meant every word of it. And I hand him my guitar. I didn't hand it to the manager. I hand BB King my guitar. And he looks at it and he looks up at the head of it. He sees Martin. And he looks up at me. He goes, "I'm going to sign it anyway." And I'm going, at this point, you know, you got this butterflies in your stomach, right? And your heart just dropped, and you see BB King signing that guitar, man. It's Martin guitar. It's still the guitar I play today. And so if the story just stopped at any of those points, it would have been unbelievable already, right? It would have been absolutely unbelievable. And people might still think this is, I've told this story so much now, they might still think this is something I made up. It's 100% true. I can't prove it to you because BB King's dead, unfortunately. But I always hoped that I would meet him again someday after I had made a little bit of a name for myself. You know what I mean? Because there was something he felt. He seen something in me. I don't know what it was, but he seen something in me. So then this is the most beautiful part. And I tear up a little bit when I tell it. So if I cry like a little baby, you just leave it in there. I had my first album, which you helped on. Didn't have anything, didn't know nobody, had no connection nowhere. Had my first album, I just got them pressed. Didn't even have the real booklet, just had it. You know how the first album is the cheapest thing? You got one sheet of paper in the front of it.
Oh, yeah.
Cheap piece of crap. Uh-huh. So it just has me on the front of it like this, like I'm in front of some old tow truck. And I hand it to BB King, and he says, He looks at it and he goes, "Who's got a Sharpie?" Right, like that. And I said, "No, that's for you." I said, "I want you to have that." He goes, "I know." He said, "Who's got the Sharpie?" Like that. Because somebody, I guess, you know, they were always taking his Sharpie or whatever. Because he was asking, he was yelling it out, like, "Who's got a Sharpie?" And then somebody brings him the Sharpie back. And he says, "I want you to sign this to me." And he made me sign my, I took that out, shaking. Took that out, took the little piece of paper out of the front of that album, and I put two. He said, "Make it to B.B. King." And I made my first autograph I ever gave was to B.B. King.
Wow.
Marty Ray. And he took that, and we got a picture. It's hanging on my wall still. He's holding that album, and we took that picture, and he put that thing in his coat just like that. And I was like, this is crazy, man. This is nuts.
Yeah.
So, like, for my whole life up to even now, I like to think that that rode on his bus forever. He might not ever listen to it. But if it just rode there, just lived there on his tour bus, my album, right? How crazy is that?
Yeah.
So then that, back to the guitar, the fact that B.B. King saw something in me enough to where he signed his number one competitor's guitar, I said, I got to at least learn how to chord this thing.
Well, so, you know, B.B. didn't know how to play chords.
He couldn't.
Yeah.
But I knew I would never get to B.B.'s. And I know I never will. I never will get to where I can play like B.B. King and do that stuff. That's just, that's another breed of person, I think. I don't. Well,
maybe the way you play like B.B. King is not with a guitar. It's with your voice.
It is exactly with my voice.
Right.
So if I bust out with, "Thrill is gone away."
All right, stop.
See?
If any of Marty's fans is listening right now, that little line, you would automatically know that was you singing.
I think so. I think
that's my a fans, unique tone. Sure. It definitely is.
It's funny how that came about, actually, because I told you earlier, and I'll try to make this quick. I told you earlier in this podcast how I was mimicking people. I didn't have my voice. I didn't know my voice. I had no voice. I was just somebody that could sound like other people and or get close. And then it was one night, thank God for Apple, because it was because of Apple computers. I got my first, in 05, I got my first Apple laptop, and it had GarageBand on it. And then when I discovered, I said, "What is this GarageBand?" And I tapped it, and I could record myself. I was like, "You mean I don't have to go to pay thousands of dollars to go to a studio to record myself?" So my cousin had already been dabbling in this, but not with Apple. So then he had a condenser mic, which I knew nothing about at the time. He had the audio interface and all this stuff. So I said, let's just go record something. So he, my uncle, the one I mentioned earlier, and this was when I was, I don't know, whatever age I was in 05. We went to the church. I said, let's record something. So we were going to record Hallelujah, the song Hallelujah, because my uncles, they sang beautifully. They sang harmonies beautifully. And so we tried, and we were going at it. Never got that finished. My uncle leaves, and he left, and I felt like, just like, man, I didn't get anything complete to actually mess around with mixing. I wanted to mix with stuff. You know what I mean? I didn't get anything complete. So I told my cousin, I said, "You just play something." And I said, "Whatever you pick out of that hymn book, I'll just sing it. Whatever it is." So then he started playing Great Speckled Bird. And I had never heard anybody sing Great Speckled Bird in my life. So I just had the lyrics in front of me, and he was playing. And I was just like, "What a beautiful thought I've been thinking." And when that came out, I was like, man, that's me. Like, I had never heard me before. That was just what came out of my heart. So from that point on, I was like, this is me, man. This is where my lane is now, and I'll never leave it. So that was it. That's where I discovered my voice, my actual own voice.
Thank you for listening to part one of Marty Ray.
All right, so make sure you subscribe, because part two is coming out later this week. We talk about the backstory of some of his viral videos, his run-in with Vanilla Ice, and a surprise that we haven't gotten to yet for you, the Root Note listeners, that you're not going to want to miss.
The Root Note has been brought to you by Put Them in a Song, in collaboration with MBI Studios. All guests know they are being recorded and are willing to be. All music and songs are created and scored by PutThemInASong.com. You can follow the Root Note podcast at Root Note Pod on Twitter. If you would like to have a song or music created for you or a loved one, visit PutThemInASong.com, where you have a better voice than you think. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on The Root Note.